Welcome to What You Didn't Expect in Fertility, Pregnancy, and Birth. How we think and feel about this enormous transition often lives in the gap between what we expected and what we actually experienced. This gap exists in part because of how we tend to talk about and portray these events on all kinds of media. In a one-dimensional way, everything was amazing. But it's more often the case that there are beautiful things that happen and, at the same time, really challenging things that happen. This show shares true experiences, both the easy parts and the difficult parts, and how we managed what we didn't expect. The intense things that can happen in the course of this transition can impact how you see yourself, how you see your partner, and how you parent. The better we understand what happened to us, the better we can manage all the things that follow. I'm your host, Paulette Kamenica. I'm a writer and an economist and the mother of two girls, and I've met many, many challenges in this process, none of which I expected. In today's episode, I talked to a woman who walked into her pregnancy imagining that it would be relatively easy, that miscarriage wasn't a part of the equation, and that her doctor would tell her everything she needed to know. It's a very relatable story, given that this is the way a lot of us walk into this experience. It's certainly the way I initially walked into pregnancy. She'd wanted an unmedicated birth, but her scheduled induction turned into a C-section in a way that really scared her and her husband. It also taught her how to adopt a different approach for the second child. We talk about her experience as a Black woman in a maternity setting, and I also talk with a fantastic professor of Black maternal health who shares the work she's doing to improve this setting from within a medical school. Let's get to this story. Hi, thanks so much for coming on the show. Can you introduce yourself and tell us where you're from?
Yeah, so my name is Andrea Singletary, and I'm from Southern California.
Oh, nice. Thanks so much for coming on. We're here to talk about the family that you created, and sometimes the family that you come from affects what you're imagining your family will be like in the future. So to start us off, did you grow up with siblings?
No, I was an only child. So I was really close to my cousins, but nope, an only child.
And growing up an only child, did that make you think I want to have more than one child or I want to have kids?
Yeah, for sure. I didn't want my kids to go through what I went through, not having that constant person to play with, talk to, or different things like that. So I knew for sure I wanted at least two kids.
Okay, great. So let's get to your kids then. When you decide to start a family, is it easy to get pregnant?
No. The first year of me and my husband, we were married, we wanted to start trying off the bat. And shortly before our 1 year anniversary, we found out that I was pregnant. And then sadly, about a week later, I miscarried. And then from there, we decided we were just going to try to hold off on trying to conceive. And we decided to just focus on us and everything. And shockingly, we got pregnant again, probably a month after the miscarriage with my son. So yeah, it definitely wasn't an easy journey. I had some health issues myself. I dealt with fibroids, polyps, had to have surgeries to have those things removed. I also have a history of lupus, and that can impact your ability to conceive. And then my husband, he had some health issues as well. So we kind of had a lot of things against us when trying to conceive.
So sorry about the miscarriage, first of all, and that it was not an easy road, because I'm imagining you walked into it like most of us do. I for sure thought the first time I had unprotected sex, I basically was pregnant.
Yeah,
I did not in any way imagine how difficult it actually is. And I have an autoimmune condition too, but I didn't know about it until I was actually pregnant. So I know that autoimmunity and pregnancy don't always play well together. What for some autoimmune conditions, pregnancy actually alleviates some of the symptoms. I'm guessing that that's not the case for lupus.
Actually, it is. So okay. I thankfully don't have a lot of the lupus symptoms, and I, for the most part, have been pretty normal. That's what my doctors would say, in that I never had to be hospitalized. I would have a flare up here and there, but by the time we started trying to conceive, it had been 5 to 6 years since I last had a flare up. So I was in the clear to conceive. But yes, my doctors did say that normally patients, when they're pregnant, those lupus symptoms kind of die down and they actually get to kind of live like a normal life during their pregnancy.
That's awesome. That's a side benefit. What's a lupus flare up? What does that involve?
So for me, it affects my joints. So I was diagnosed when I was 12 and both of my knees swelled to the size of volleyballs and I couldn't walk. So my mom had to take me to the hospital and they did all kinds of tests and scans and it came back that it was lupus. So it presents differently in different people. But for me, it's more of like I have the joint pain and have arthritis in a sense.
Man, 12 seems early. How shocking, right? And a long time to carry that with you, right? It's a, for me anyway, the autoimmune thing is a bit of a burden because you, anytime something weird happens, you're like, oh, that's probably autoimmune. That's the watchword, right?
Yeah, for sure. Last year we got COVID and I literally could feel it attacking my joints. And it impacts so many different things with lupus. You have to be mindful of the type of foods that you eat. You have to keep your stress levels down. There's so much that goes into it. You have low energy, which, you know, as a mom, that's challenging. So yeah, it impacts you in so many different ways.
Well, I'm excited for your lupus holiday with your first pregnancy. And what's the pregnancy like?
So when I was pregnant with my son, honestly, it was a smooth pregnancy, but I had a lot of anxiety because I had just had the miscarriage and wasn't expecting to get pregnant again so quickly. And I really didn't have much time to grieve or process that loss. And so I was constantly worried. Every time I would go to the bathroom, I would check to see if there was blood because that's what I was expecting to happen again. And I did have one scare early on and immediately I went to ER and they did a scan. I hadn't even had my first scan yet. So it was super early in the pregnancy, but they did a scan and they reassured me that baby had a good heart rate and all of that. But it was just a lot of worry and fear and wondering if I was going to make it to the end of this pregnancy and deliver a healthy baby.
Yeah, I think miscarriage is, everybody responds to it differently. And I think it is painful no matter how far along you are, because as soon as you hear that you're pregnant, if that's what you want to be, you have already made all the plans, right? So it's the loss of all that stuff. How far along were you that first time when you lost the pregnancy?
Probably not even 6 weeks. So it was really early, but like you had said, it was the first time being pregnant. I didn't imagine loss. That didn't even cross my mind. So I was telling everyone. I bought the onesie for our announcement. I had planned everything out. So yeah, but it was pretty early on.
So I wonder if the only kind of benefit of not having imagined a miscarriage is that you had people to rely on when it didn't work out. Because I feel like it was my doctor who told me not to tell anyone till 12 weeks because it might not work out, which I actually, on reflection, think is a crap strategy because now I'm alone and I can't tell anyone or I don't feel comfortable telling people. So was that helpful to you to have people around?
It was, especially having my mom to lean on and friends and everything. Our church was super supportive. They sent flowers, they sent food and everything. So just having everyone rallying around me and my husband, it made a world of a difference.
Good. Okay. But I can imagine now that you see that that is so easy a possibility that it could miscarry, it's hard to put that down, right? It's hard to.
Yeah, for sure. After we found out I was pregnant with my son, we didn't tell anyone. I think the only person I told was my mom, but my husband refused to tell anyone. Even after I had reached the 12 weeks mark, he's like, no, let's wait a little bit longer and everything. He didn't express it, but I know he took it very hard. But yeah, we were very quiet and a lot of our friends were surprised when we did finally announce it. And they're like, well, why didn't you tell us sooner? And so we shared with them, you know, because of what happened with the miscarriage, we just didn't want to share. We didn't want to have to go back and say, oh, you know what, we lost the baby.
Yeah. Yeah, that is hard. And did you at some point become more comfortable with the pregnancy and think this is going to last, or you need the baby in your arms?
Probably not until I reached the third trimester. But even then, I still worried. It was the worry of like, oh, he's not moving at his normal time. Is there something wrong? And I even did go to the hospital a couple times because he wasn't like being active when he normally was. And so it was just throughout the entire thing. I don't think I was finally at peace until I had him in my arms.
It is a fraught process and it is a lot harder than it looks, is my
Yeah.
experience of it. So before we get to the birth, do you have a vision in your head of what you think the birth will be like or what you're hoping for?
Yeah. So I made an entire birth plan when we checked into the hospital. I gave it to the nurses and everything. I knew I wanted to do a natural birth and I have certain requests. I went into it knowing what I wanted, but I didn't prepare my body to be able to do that.
What does that mean?
So when it comes to like if you're doing a natural birth and no pain meds or anything like that, you have to prepare yourself mentally, emotionally. There's certain things that you need to do, and I didn't really prepare for it. I just made up in my mind that I wanted to do it, but didn't really research, well, what does it look like? How do you manage the pain without pain meds and different things like that?
So this is actually a really good point. What can you do before the birth to prepare for an unmedicated birth if that's what you're hoping to experience? I found a sort of checklist on the American College of Gynecologists and Obstetricians website on this very topic. I won't list everything because it's too long, but the list includes things you would think of, like staying active during the pregnancy and eating well and taking a birthing class to get a sense of what you're walking into. And in particular, classes geared toward unmedicated birth strategies like Lamaze, the Bradley method, or hypnobirthing. And the list also includes things you might not immediately think of, like researching the hospital where you intend to have birth to see how common unmedicated births are at your hospital, and to see if the hospital has tools to support this process, like birthing stools and balls and baths. I'll include the link in the show notes if you want to check out the full list. Is that because you didn't know what to expect because you'd never done it before? Or yeah, it's
Yeah,
like the first
very
time.
naive. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how would you know, right? It is so experiential. And I think one of the goals of this podcast is to share this hard-won wisdom with people who have not gone through it so that maybe they approach it in a different way. Because, right, did you come to birth with any stories? Did you have an idea? Did your mom say, oh, wasn't that bad? Or what did people tell you?
Yeah, my mom, she shared the story with me. So when she went into the hospital, she wasn't fully dilated yet, but they checked her in. They finally put her in the room, and it literally progressed quickly within minutes. Like my head was literally coming out. She had to scream for the nurse and the doctor to come. And so I was like, oh, well, maybe because she had such a quick and easy experience, maybe it'll be like that for me too. But then I did hear the horror stories too. But I tried to kind of push those out of my mind because I didn't want that to impact what I was expecting and what I was hoping for.
So let's go to the day of the birth. How do you know today's the day? What happens?
So, because of the lupus, I was seen by maternal fetal medicine. So, that's where high risk pregnancies and everything. They actually scheduled me for an induction at 39 weeks. So, they called me probably like a few hours before they wanted me to come in. And keep in mind, this was at the height of COVID. So, I had my son April 2020. So, literally, COVID
Wow.
just started.
Yeah.
So, only my husband could come with me. We both had to wear masks and everything. So my anxiety was already up because this was not what I imagined for my birth experience. So I went in.
Because you thought your mom would be there, or what were you imagining?
Yeah, I knew I wanted my mom there and my husband there. We had paid to have a birth photographer to come out. So after the birth, to take those pictures of the first moments and everything, we had a plan for people to come and visit. We had this whole vision for it, and that was shut down by COVID.
Yeah.
We checked into the hospital. They took us to our room. I gave them my birth plan and we discussed things. And so I told them I want to try for a natural birth. So I don't want to do any pain meds or anything like that. So they started the induction process and kind of like just waiting to see what would happen, to see.
So what's the induction process look like?
So they started with, I can't remember what the name of the pill is, but it's pretty much to soften your cervix and everything. So they started with that. And then
does that feel like anything?
No. Yeah, that was the easy part. Then they did, oh my gosh, the Foley bulb. And that was the most painful thing I had ever experienced.
And that's to open your cervix?
Mm-hmm. And they told me that, oh, you shouldn't feel anything. Well, that was a lie. I felt everything. And at that point, it started bringing on the contractions, but they weren't consistent. So then after a while, they switched to the Pitocin. And that brought on crazy contractions where I was not getting any relief. And I finally said, you know what? I can't do that. I need something to help me manage the pain.
Has anybody said anything to you about an induced labor potentially being more painful than a... Okay.
No one told me anything. They made it seem like it was an easy process. I had a cousin who she was induced with her daughter and she didn't have any issues. It went smoothly. So I ended up asking for the epidural because I couldn't handle it anymore.
Although one thing I'd say though, is even if it goes smoothly, which is to say smoothly is kind of a tricky word because smoothly means it goes according to some medical plan, but that doesn't mean that it's not messy and painful. You know, I found contractions shockingly painful. I thought, how come no one told me? And when I'd ask people what are contractions, literally every medical person said, oh, you'll know when it happens. With a little bit of like a grin, which, you know, is not comforting. Yeah. And I couldn't breathe when the contractions came. Maybe I stopped my own breathing because I was so taken aback or something, but I found it shocking. And no one had said contractions will feel like your entire stomach is closing in on itself or your entire rib cage or
I like to describe it as it literally feels like your uterus is being ripped in half.
Yeah.
But imagine that. And that's even magnified with the Pitocin because those aren't natural contractions. And I was feeling that. And so it was like, I couldn't focus or anything. And so I was like, I need the epidural now. Yeah. And so they got the anesthesiologist and unfortunately, the hospital that I was birthing at, it's a teaching one. And so they had one of the students do the epidural. And of course, he didn't do it properly. So I was not getting that relief like I needed. And even though I was communicating that to the nurses, they weren't listening to me. So I was dealing with that.
Wait, what does that look like? You're saying I can feel everything and they're looking around? Or?
They're telling me, oh, you just need to press the button so that more of the medicine will come out. I did that. It did nothing. Literally, I was screaming in pain and they're just pretty much not taking me seriously.
Okay, this is frustrating.
Yeah, it was very upsetting, especially for my husband. He felt so helpless.
Yeah.
Even though he was going to the nurses, telling them, hey, something's not right. It's not working. And no one would do anything.
I took this question of feeling unsafe in the hands of your care providers to a doctor who studies these issues. Today, we're lucky to have Dr. Amuta Anukaga on the show. She's a professor of Black maternal health in the Department of Public Health and Community Medicine at Tufts University School of Medicine. In 2022, she founded the Center for Black Maternal Health and Reproductive Justice at Tufts University School of Medicine as one of the first centers dedicated nationwide to addressing maternal health inequalities. Doctor, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. Really excited to be here today.
You have many more things under your name that you have done, and we could spend all day talking about those, but I know that we're pressed for time, so we're just going to get right to it. So to get started, can you talk to us a little bit about your research focus and what brought you to that interest?
Yeah, so my research and my passion is really in the space of Black maternal health and maternal health inequities. And I came to have this passion from one, watching friends of mine die unnecessarily from preventable complications. And two, as part of my training at the doctor level in maternal and child health, I realized that there were significant inequities that Black and Brown birthing people face that maybe other people are not facing. And so trying to get to the root of that and really figuring out how we can hold the healthcare system accountable for people's outcomes and trying to level the playing field, if you will. So these are some of the things that I kind of grapple with in my work and in my research.
Well, a critical area of research. So thank you for the work that you're doing. And in our discussion, I'm going to try to get a view of health policy from 50,000 feet because you are in a medical school, right? And also an up close view if I can. And I realize that some of these questions that I'm asking don't necessarily have an answer. So feel free to tell me that.
Okay.
So Andrea asked for an epidural, which doesn't entirely work, and she's asking for more pain relief, and her requests are essentially being ignored. And I'm wondering if you can conjecture why her views are being cast aside. Why are they treating her like she doesn't understand her own body?
Well, the healthcare system in all its glory does not have a history of prioritizing Black lived experience and really centering women's experiences and women's perceptions of pain, particularly if these women happen to be Black and Brown. You know, thinking back even to the history of obstetric racism and how the discipline of obstetrics and gynecology was founded, we know a lot of the techniques, a lot of the forefathers really perfected their surgical prowess and the way medical care was delivered on the bodies of Black enslaved women where their voices were silenced. And so this is documented extensively in the history. And currently, if you ask many medical students, they will still tell you with utmost confidence that Black women and Black people have higher pain thresholds, have more layers of skin, are more likely to be able to withstand pain. So when you think about this context and you think about just really how fragmented and broken the healthcare system really is, both the historical context and the present day conditions that Black birthing people are navigating, I'm not surprised that she was not prioritized and listened to. I hear this all the time. People send me messages, they're in my DMs, just people that I know in my life about the lack of urgency to their requests, just the sheer denial. And that, for me, feels like a marker of racism. It feels like the way that racism shows up in the healthcare system. Black birthing people and birthing people in general, you know what your body is experiencing. No one can tell you more than you're feeling yourself. But this particular instance, it plays into the larger conversation about the dismissiveness, the lack of urgency. She couldn't possibly be in that much pain. This couldn't possibly be a priority, right? It's just constant diminishing. And this constant diminishing ultimately has cost people their lives. And if it hasn't cost people their lives, then it has resulted in some unnecessary and completely preventable complications. And lupus in particular is one that is really sad to hear because it's an autoimmune disorder, and this woman has been living with this for a long time. So her risk is just exacerbated. Her pain is going to be higher. And in this situation, instead of getting the softness and, frankly, prioritization that she deserves, as a Black birthing person who has been in this body her entire life but has had this formal diagnosis, it's another marker.
Then at that point, because the contractions were coming back to back so quickly and I still wasn't getting any relief, my son's heart rate was dropping. And so that's when the doctor came in and said, look, it's not working. You're not progressing. We need to think about doing a C-section. So here I am. I'm dealing with all of this. I'm already feeling like I'm not in a safe environment. And now they're saying I have to do a C-section, which I never wanted to do. And I remember calling my mom and I was just in tears because I was like, I don't know what to do. And you're not here with me.
Yeah.
And it was really hard. I was so scared. I thought I was going to die because they had already shown me that they really didn't care about my safety. They weren't listening to me.
Are there any words that Andrea could have used to make herself heard? So the reason I ask this is because in another forum, someone was saying that she kept repeating, I do not consent. And now, on the one hand, you don't want to make yourself an adversary, right? Once you use those legal terms, on the other hand, that is going to stop someone in their tracks if they hear, yeah, I don't consent.
Yeah.
So it's useful. And at that point, I think Andrea already feels like it is adversarial since she's complaining that she has this pain, which is being ignored.
Right.
Other than something like that, is there anything that you might counsel someone to use, any language to get past this hurdle if they're in the hospital?
I'm a very direct kind of person, but I also recognize my privilege and agency in the space, right? I have an advanced degree. I work with a lot of these hospitals and providers through my research. So I know people that know people. And so when I'm in labor, as I have been at these hospitals, and I feel like I'm being mistreated, something that I might say would be along the lines of, I'm uncomfortable with this situation, and it feels like I'm being treated differently because of my race. And just being really clear about it, you know, not in a way that is diminutive of the situation and not in a way that is going to potentially be more adversarial, but just owning, this is how I'm feeling.
Yeah.
And I really would appreciate if there was another nurse or someone else on the team that I could interact with other than you.
And so my mom just really tried to calm me down and prayed with me in that moment. And me and my husband discussed things, and we decided to go forward with the C-section. So they were preparing me for all of that, having to sign paperwork and all of that stuff. And then they finally told us what time we were going to go to do the C-section and everything. Thankfully, they did allow my husband to be there in the room with me during the C-section because, again, with COVID,
yeah,
hospitals had different policies at that time. So
this is really scary. I mean, you literally couldn't be more vulnerable. There's no turning back. You can't stop, right? You can't go somewhere else.
Yeah, I can't tell the baby to hold on.
It is totally scary. And it is one of those moments where you feel you are aware, and you're aware of how much your life is in someone else's hands. Mm-hmm. So I can imagine while you're trying to communicate with them and not getting the response you want, not really getting it at all, a response that suggests they're hearing you and taking you seriously, it just elevates how scary it is.
Yeah. My anxiety was through the roof at that point. And I just was like, you know what? The main thing is that my son gets here alive. So I just kind of sucked it up and, you know, went along with it. And so they finally took me in to do the C-section. And
I'm going to stop my conversation with Andrea here for today. I don't know if listening to her story, you're feeling how I'm feeling, which honestly is angry. If you've been through birth yourself, you know that it's hard enough without the overlay of worry and fear that Andrea and her husband, and unfortunately too many other women, have to contend with, that the commitment of their care team is unclear. It's a testament to her strength to get through this. That's all I'll say about this for now, as Andrea has much more to say about her own experience, what it taught her, and what she changed in her second experience of birth. As well, Dr. Amuta Anakaga has more suggestions about managing these issues and more on the work she's doing to change the birthing environment for all of us. Thanks for listening. If you like this story, please pass it along to friends. Next week, we'll hear the rest of Andrea's story, including the outcome of this C-section and a specific thing she did differently to have a much more empowered experience. And we'll hear more from Dr. Amuta Anakaga on what the future may hold for birthing people.